He's recording. How's that? Don't worry, but it's quite a good microphone.
So I don't need to shout.
Don't shout.
Okay.
It should be fine. If for some reason it's unclear, you know, if there's noise outside or whatever, then you just repeat, you know, don't worry. Yeah, okay.
No worries.
So I start with an easy question. What was the name and aim of the project?
The name and aim of the project. So you're talking about projects generally, aren't you?
Well,
or are you talking about the current project?
No, specifically this is about Elevate.
Okay. All right.
Okay, so it's about the old project. Yeah.
Oh, right. So the name and aim of the project. Gosh. So it was Elevate Cymru. It was a Pan-Wales project tasked with delivering short courses to businesses within the convergence area to meet business needs. So to identify what businesses needed and to make sure that we met that through short courses that delivered a difference in the workplace, if you like, and working as part of a partnership with all our other partners in the group to make that difference in Wales.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what was your role within that?
Well, my role was I was employed as the lead tutor on the programme for Carmarthen. So, we weren't the lead partner, Swansea University was, and so we had a manager, if you like, for our bit. But I was the sort of lead tutor, so I was really focused on the delivery of our targets and what we needed to do. So academically and just the general management, taking the view, making sure we did it within budget and things like that. But it was very much an overview in that terms, because I had my project officer to do all the detailed stuff.
Okay. And so at the start of the project, what did you see as the main challenges you would face?
Both myself and my project officer were fairly inexperienced in this type of thing. I had been working for the university then for, under a year anyway, as less than that perhaps, as a fellow on another project. So I'd had my experience of projects in that respect in Wales was, not particularly broad. I was really focused as the fellow on the teaching and on my specialist area, mentoring. So I'd become very familiar with all the processes and so forth involved in that kind of thing, but this was really the first kind of management in Wales in HE. So this is my first experience of HE as well. What was the question?
That's your personal challenge. In terms of the project achieving its targets,
right?
What from a project point of view would you say were the key risks that you were thinking, you were expecting to encounter?
So straight at the beginning, because we felt, right at the beginning that there would be interest from businesses and that we would take a very collaborative approach. And we hadn't really had that sort of thing, we'll write a module for you. We were really looking at what we had initially, though that developed later on. Mm. As we realised that businesses wanted a particular thing or whatever, but the big challenge was how we were going to fit into this pan approach and how that would work, how we would work with our partners, how we would make sure that nobody felt like it was a competition, to try and take that view. It was very difficult because you have this project that's trying to take that whole let's all work as partners together, and then you've got the individual institutions where you meet that resistance. So that I felt was going to be the biggest challenge right at the beginning. However, we were, you know, with our initial meetings with Swansea and the manager in Swansea, we were feeling quite buoyant and confident that we'd be able to do it under his management. We felt that it would work.
Yeah, so essentially we were confident about the delivery side. So the, you know, the question mark was about the
how it would all work.
Governance-y sort of.
Yeah, and yes, and how, when, you know, in certain lights, institutions were in competition, and yet we were trying to promote this partnership working. So felt that would be a challenge, but both us and Swansea Uni, we felt we were very much on the same page in terms of our area, if you like. And so, you know, we were thinking about how we were all going to work together moving forward.
Was consortium working a new thing, as far as you know, in terms of the institutions involved?
As far as the university, yeah. I don't know.
I was wondering, it was, you know, within narrowly.
Narrowly, very much.
Okay, thanks. Okay, and anyway, you've covered this, but how confident were you that the project would succeed?
Very confident. I in my brief period of working in work-based learning, and that was before it became Whibble, of course, but I'll refer to it as Whibble because it's just easier. You know, in the brief time I'd worked, I thought I very much liked the ethos and what Liz and what Work-Based Learning were trying to do and how they were working and how they worked. I thought it was good. I thought the previous projects, although, you know, lateral, I didn't get targets, whatever, but I thought, and particularly Mao, I thought they were really good, and my experience of meeting and working with companies, it was well received. There would seem to be a real appetite for this type of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I felt extremely confident at the beginning that we would actually smash targets, and
Okay. And then, so when you said the projects that actually started, then how was the progress monitored? What were the mechanisms in place to?
Okay, so we obviously had our. You're really asking me to remember.
Well, no, I mean, as far as you recall,
obviously, I was reporting to the head, Liz, and. Via these sort of mechanisms, like the team meetings, we had our own team meetings, very similar to now. You know, we had our the Elevate team meetings. We had the work-based learning or Whibble team meetings. We had to report. Obviously, she was reporting again to faculty and all the rest of it. And we had an extremely good relationship where that communication was very good. Along with that, we had to report to our lead partner Swansea, and then along with that we had to report to the wider PAN as well as PMU, but Swansea did the lion's share of that, so we didn't really have to do very very much of that initially, but we were all part of that team, if you like, so that there was a lot of, what was the question again?
It was a question about how the project's progress was monitored.
Yes, yeah. So it was, we were very much on it. We had our overall targets, but then we set ourselves, you know, Catherine did a Gantt chart, which we followed quite, you know, closely, and we made sure, we had a small team of people, we made sure that we got everybody. The problem that we had in the first year, it took a year to sign the contract. Now, that was partly, the problem was because of the PAN approach. We had so many partners. There was huge issues with Swansea University. Even though the manager was great, the institution, it was really, really difficult. And so we were kind of not allowed to deliver for a year. So it had, that was very, what we were doing was, building up our contacts, making sure we had people ready waiting to go, and making sure the materials, that everything was, good to go. But it was very difficult because it took such a long time for that to get sorted out.
So presumably that had an impact in terms of your profile.
Oh yeah, big deal.
Because you were starting with it.
Yeah, absolutely. But equally, in response to that, we could say, we are ready, we're good to go. Liz was we're very lucky. I mean, Catherine and I tended to deal with Swansea direct, but then Liz was extremely good at liaising with SMT and reassuring. I still felt supremely confident that we'd do it once we could get that sort of silliness out of the way. So that was a problem. Now, I can't... And we... When did... Because Swansea pulled out. I'm trying to...
The next question then.
Okay.
Think again, in a way, we've got to the point where the project's starting.
Yes.
And then when you actually came to implement, start delivering, when you start work on the project, really. We're going to ask you about what issues were encountered. So first of all, in terms of ones you expected, which you mentioned already, what were the actual problems you identified that had already...
Well, we didn't expect it would take so long to sign the contract. That was a real issue for us, and it was a case of, Liz was able to reassure the institution. I had to try and keep the team, focused and buoyed up. It was very difficult, particularly for the academics who wanted to teach. But we were a very small team, so that helped, I think. And we could get involved in different engagements and so forth. But that was incredibly hard.
That
was the main problem.
That was almost like an external constraint on your activity.
And that's what that's what we found. We found actually going through the whole project, we knew what we were doing, we were happy, our clients and potential clients were good to go, and all that stuff was great. But we and Catherine, yourself as well, from your own experience, but Catherine, the project officer, did very well in terms of dealing with all the the PMU demands, which increased. That became a problem, more of a problem for us after Swansea pulled out, because then we became the kind of lead for our bit. It was just us, we weren't in partnership with anybody then. I'm trying to remember that, as I can't remember.
So it was still a consortium, but within this area,
because Swansea. So that the problems with Swansea and what was going on there made it very difficult for us. But that was after we'd started delivering, and we just head down, crack on with it. But obviously that was interesting, and then we had the then they went and we dealt with PMU directly, and really, we're exposed to the information demands and things, whereas before Swansea had kind of protected us a little bit. So I was really unfortunate with Swansea, and it was never... I'm trying to remember now. It was never overly clear why that all... It just kind of all fell apart. I don't know. Not sure what was involved.
Yeah, sure.
I can't remember, but...
Yeah, sure.
It kind of fell apart, and so I think Liz was saying, do we continue, which we were very keen to do, because we could see the potential and the demand and so forth, and that's how that worked. So there was a lot of stuff, as you said, external, and that was exacerbated by the fact that we were part of this wider consortium, so we weren't just looking after ourselves, we had to be... working with all these other people, so that was a challenge, and then it was unfortunate. So it was a shame, I thought, because I thought that, to me, that was what HE needed to do, was to start really properly working together in partnership. So it's a shame that that didn't work. But we, the consortium, eventually, we did get on track. But it took a little while, which is not surprising when you think about what we were trying to do. It's quite an ambitious project, I think.
Okay. And I think if we just answer this, what was the single biggest challenge the project faced? And I think you've implied it's that shift in the structures.
That initial, settling. I think later on, when it was just us, I would say that the PMU, very high level of demand for information, that actually since we found having to deal with WEFO directly in the subsequent project, a lot of the stuff they were asking for, there was no need. It was over. And so much. And there, with really rubbish deadlines, you had no hope of, getting. So that was, and that's what I've really enjoyed about the current project, is our ability to work with WEFO directly. I think that's been a big plus for us now. And certainly that was a real challenge. So I think initially in the project, it was that, obviously the difficulties with our partner, which was a real shame that Swansea pulled out. But then it was just finding out how we're going to work with all the other partners. But that in the end, it worked beautifully. It was a wonderful partnership between all the institutions, and we were helping each other. It was really nice, actually. It was a really nice thing. But PMU always remained kind of a problem we had to deal with, if you know what I mean. I couldn't feel very positive about them, lovely as they were. But I think there were big challenges, and it changed as we went along. But I was very proud, really proud, that, the consortium as it was, if it was called that, I can't remember.
I'm using it as a generic.
The partnership whatever. really worked so nicely in the end. It was, I thought that was a real achievement, yeah.
Right. Okay, so in the end, did the project meet its targets?
It did, yeah. It beat didn't it?
What changes were made to the targets over the course of the project?
We did reprofile. I can't remember the details. Did you? We had those moments where you're not hitting targets and you're under pressure. I was protected a lot by Liz on that. She dealt with the university a lot in those terms. I always felt 100% confident that we would do it if they just leave us alone and let us get on type stuff. And that's what we just powered through with. And we did. In the last year, it was bonkers, which is what I told lecturers at the start when it was quiet. I said,
Well, so presumably because of the issue about the starting
that contract,
so that meant that you had to deliver your targets over a shorter period at the end.
But also it took us until the last year to get in a 3-year project to get into our stride, which is why it's so frustrating with GLAAD now, that we're not being allowed to be given the time. Because if we were, I think things would change. Because for some reason, that's what organisations, you've only got a year, I think I'll pull my finger out and actually come and do something. And that's what happened with Elevate. So suddenly there was that interest.
Okay. Right. So how were lessons learned captured during the project and at the end?
Well, we did it very much part of, the closing report, closure report, I started very, very early on, and I started thinking about those learning activities. We used to have getting the team together and brainstorming, etc. And what we learned, we had all the usual evaluative processes, like plus delta and
all
that.
They're not necessarily usual. I mean,
usual for Whibble.
Not usual at all, are they?
No. So you know, every session we would do the plus delta, and we took it very much to heart. And the changes we made in how we delivered were really, really quite noticeable, actually. So that was nice because you started to really develop some strong products. But also then we had that initially. So we were working with Swansea, but when we were part of the wider consortium, we would meet, it was quarterly probably. I can't remember, and that was very much part of it, you know, what have we learned, what can we share, what best practice, you know, what mistakes did you make? It was very open and with a real will to try and help each other, so that was really, really good. So it was kind of a consistent process all the way through, which had really been kind of drummed in to me as soon as I started as a fellow, you know, to look at what you're doing, because we're reflective and all that stuff, isn't it? But it was nice to see it on the wider consortium as well. And of course PMU was very interested in those type of things as well, as we went along and would ask those type of questions as well. So, yeah.
And then in the closure report, you summarised the lessons learned.
Yes. Well, I haven't seen it for years.
Oh, well, yeah. you did, there's a section.
Yeah.
So my question then is, so we've identified lots of sort of best practice and lessons learned in the course of the project.
Yes.
How well do you think the institution has remembered those and built those into
I think quite well. My goodness, it was hard work though. Oh, good lord, it was hard work. And that's and me and Kirsten, the head of the consortium, whatnot. That's why we wrote that paper on work-based learning in HE based on that experience.
All right.
I'll send it to you after. Crikey, it was hard work. I'll email you. It was everything, you know, when we... And sometimes there was resistance within, as well as all the quality things. And what basically the university wanted us to fit in, so our learners to be like your normal 18-year-olds or whatever, including all the processes. And there was no... Oh, crikey, it used to wind me up so much. You just felt like you hit your head against a brick wall. They were interested in the practicalities of a work-based learner or what they're dealing with. I mean, that was so excited when that thing came through where... what's it called? Where you can take a break or whatever from your studies. And one of the reasons you can just say is work pressure. Yeah. Hooray! Yeah. Hooray! Because at the beginning, my God, what they'd expect. And I'm sitting on and all that, and I say, look, these people, they're working full time. They've got families. They've got all these, you know, pressures that they're trying to manage. And we should be flexible. We should be helping them, you know.
What you're saying is that amongst the lessons learned was recognising that the standard systems which were in place weren't actually suitable for the type of learners that you were working with, and so you've identified a series of sort of tensions where change would make life easier, and that some of those were implemented and some of them weren't. Is that?
Yes, but I mean, initially, honestly, it was a brick wall.
Yeah.
And it was incredibly frustrating.
During the project?
The project. It was so frustrating. It really made me angry, actually. There was just this no interest in the client, and actually what we try, no understanding that we, they are your customer, none of that. And we used to have to argue every, particularly quality and all these bloody rules and regulations, and yeah, you think, oh, there was no sense at all. Oh no, this is how we do it. Mm. This model that has been running for centuries is how we're going to do it. Well, do you know what? You're not going to last. You're going to have to change. You're going to have to be an innovative and actually work out who is my customer, what do they want?
But I suppose, in a way, that, I mean, well, the question is that a natural tension between, well, given that work-based learning had been delivered previously, what was it about the project that really threw that into sharp relief? Why hadn't those issues been
come up? I think, and this is really such a fascinating thing, because you've got your work-based learner and you've got your tension there, and that's, as I say, that's why me and Kirsten wrote the paper, because we all had the same. We all had the same problem. It's driving us all bonkers. So you've got that problem. You've then got projects. Projects in higher education. Oh my God. So we've got to get this, and we've got to get it by then. In order to do that, we need you to do that. Wow! Trying to get different parts of the institution to actually do stuff and do stuff quickly. You know, getting them to respond to us. It was unbelievably frustrating that they were so slow dragging. I mean, they're much, much better now. It's much, much better. For all the frustrations that we have in the current project, it's so much better that at the beginning and during Elevate, but they slowly were getting better. Oh, my God. So there's two. So you've got your projects. Actually, we have to deliver this by then. There's no excuses with that. You know, that has to happen. And then you've got the work-based learners and how they don't actually fit in and how you need to accommodate them. And so you had those two really interesting tensions, not just with this institution.
No.
And actually at the time, this institution wasn't as bad compared to some others, because the whole consortium were experiencing these frustrations. And it took a long time. So it's very gratifying to see in this current project how much more willing they are to be a little bit more flexible, and how much there seems to be a better understanding. I think we've had really cracking people from the institution supporting us, people like the finance director, for example, who, and David had really strong, you know, he understood and he appreciated, and people moan about HR, but frankly, they were fantastic. And I consider what I had to do in terms for this project, what I had to do. It took a long time. Yeah. Everything, and you think, no, actually, I've got this much time. We can't hang about. We've got to do this. It's got to be delivered now. So yeah, that's
So in a way, you're saying that the in the past, the work-based learners were forced to be accommodated within the old structure.
And I think extremely disadvantaged because of it.
Yeah, and that, you know, that if that meant that they had to wait another year to graduate, well, so be it.
Whatever.
But the projects had, because the project targets were so time specific, there was no, that was not an option, that they had, you know, that then they needed to change,
Got to crack on. Thanks. And as I said, it was very, very, and I really appreciate it now, how good Liz was in terms of smoothing the way with the institution. That was helpful. And actually, in the end, how good the consortium was as well. And I think that kind of joint effort kind of helped to change that culture, which is great. You know, I you still have that. I think we're not bad at all now. It, fantastic compared to what we were. Mm. What the institution, how they looked at web-based learners and all the rest of it. So it, there's been some such positive change that I'm seeing the benefits now. Mm. But Elevate, and I'm sure you had the same with Sutu, but certainly with Elevate, it was very frustrating, despite the support that we had, to try and push that through. Yeah. And we just had to keep pushing and annoying people and things like that.
And you mentioned the other partners.
Yes.
Are you aware of whether they've carried on with work-based learning and have made changes or
Certainly, coming to the end of our partnership, they all talked about. We all talked about how, you know, this will go forward. This will go forward, etc. But then, all of us. Well, I stayed with, but a lot of them just moved on.
Yeah.
To outside.
So the other organisations. Their work-based learning provision.
Well, I can't say that. I can only say that my contact in the consortiums, they tended to move on to different stuff or outside the institution.
There's a lack of continuity there. So
I mean, I think we were very unusual, in the sense that Liz hung on. Mm. Managed, I don't know how, to persuade the institution to hang on to us so that we could continue in the same vein. That was quite an achievement for her. I didn't see it happen in the other, as far as I'm aware.
No. I mean, it's part of working with projects is that it's one thing to take on a project, and it's another to make an open-ended commitment to continue activity
I think, you know, Lateral, Mao, Susu, Elevate, that's the legacy has continued and it's resulted in GLAAD, and that legacy will feed, I hope, into Wibble, and it will continue going. So here, so far, I don't know what the future holds, but at this point in time, it's looking good. All that learning and all that expertise and all that experience has been put to good use. Yeah. I hope it continues. I'm not as confident, but I hope so.
Okay then. And then that's in terms of, you know, how the institution has learned. And then in terms of you individually, what impact has the experience of being that lead academic had on your professional practice?
Right. I came to the university having worked in my specialism full time as a mentor scheme trainer, and I moved in and I was as a fellow, and again mainly working on mentoring and so forth while I got my doctorate. Then I went into Elevate as the lead, and suddenly I was in management. And I suppose I, towards the end of Elevate, and even though I stayed on to help write the GLAAD bid, and I stayed on with every intention of coming into GLAAD, a big part of me was saying, really, management, is that really for you? And GLAAD has been quite challenging in terms of management. I've loved the working with the people. That's been a real pleasure. But I think I've come to the conclusion management really isn't for me. And actually, what I should do is move back into mentoring, which is where I'm happier. So I don't actually like the person I am as a manager. I was much nicer as a mentor. I'm much bossier as a manager. I don't think it's good for me. So I've had a change in that sense. I enjoyed Elevate. It was a small team. It was a very manageable. I mean, I moan about it, but I really felt like we were making a difference. And that was, and the whole ethos was so strong. And you could get really passionate about it. And that's why I loved recruiting for GLAAD, because I was recruiting all these people who really cared. And it comes through, and that's why we've got such a great reputation for quality. And it was because Liz had created this very nurturing environment. That's changed now, and it's very interesting to me the influence a leader can have. Very interesting to me. That a whole ethos and direction can change completely, and it's not for me now. But yeah, I think I am a good leader. I don't think I'm a very good manager, because I don't like detail. It just bores me, to be honest with you. And you really need to be able to have an eye for detail. But equally, I believe in trusting people and giving them, you know, a fair crack of the whip and that sort of thing. So I think the learning, Elevate I regard as a big achievement, because it was out of my comfort zone. And the aspects of management, there were a lot of aspects of management I didn't like. And it took me away from the teaching that I was doing as a fellow. And I think I floated into this, you know, the next project in the same mode, when really I should have thought about it and thought, well, you know, might you be a lecturer again, or do you know what I mean, or a fellow, or what have you. So in terms of, I've learned so much about, not just about work-based learning, but also about, you know, writing modules, about engaging with businesses, finding out what works for them, what they need, learning how important it is to listen and not to force fit your clients. And I've learned a lot about the politics in these type of institutions, and how I don't really like that sort of thing. You know, I'd much rather people just up front and say what can't cope with the you know, bang me over the head with it and just tell me. So that's been quite an eye-opener. I enjoyed working with like-minded people within the institution and within the consortium, and actually seeing these other people who, again, the main driving force was the learner, and how could we help them. That spoke directly to me as somebody who left school with bugger all and just floated from job just to earn enough money for fags and booze and going out partying, to, you know, engaging with work-based learning in my 30s. And then really changing my life through it, and to be able to help other people, not all have the same kind of thing, but, you know, make those positive, and then to be talking with colleagues who will feel the same, and then colleagues within the consortium who all try, you know, it was a fantastic experience, actually. A lot of challenges. But a really fantastic experience in that. So it's a lot of learning. It's been a huge, like, I've learned so much. But I've concluded that really, at this time in my life anyway, it's time for me now to get back to mentoring. Did that answer the question?
That's brilliant. Okay, and so my last question. Oh. And what did you find most challenging personally about your role in the project? Now, what kept you awake?
Right. So, I did have some challenging staff situations, but I didn't mind that. That was okay. Oh, you know, it was hard. I have to think about how to do things, but that was okay. What kept me awake at night was the more formal environments where there were politics maybe playing. You know, I'm not very careful. This is why I'm not very good as a manager. I don't cover my arse. Okay, I'm not very careful. I trust people. I just pile in. if I screw up, I say, oh, sorry, I screwed up. Because to me, there's nothing wrong with making mistakes. That's how I learn. Yeah. And I think that should apply to everybody. But I was very easy then to shoot down, if you know what I mean. So where that happened, that would really bring me down. Didn't happen a lot, fortunately. But there were a couple of occasions when, and absolutely right, I can't, you know, I can't knock it. I didn't tick, you know, the boxes or cross the T's or whatever. I'm not very good at that sort of stuff. I'll put my hands up and all the rest of it. And I would say, look, I've screwed up. Please don't punish my students for my, you know, I messed up. I made a mistake. But they were really, you know, vicious, unnecessarily. And it's very interesting to me because I always had this idea about, before I really got into this sort of educate and all that, of, academia. It's all lovely, isn't it? They're dusty old books and, you know, Jesus Christ, academics can be vicious. And, you know, really, unnecessarily so. You think, crikey, O'Reilly, we're all here together. We're all trying to work. So I'm a bit naive, actually. I'm very naive. On a certain level, I'm too naive. People can easily take advantage of me and easily show me out and make themselves look good if they're trying to get political favour or whatever. So I'm not very good at that sort of thing. And so I'd be in a corner with really, you know, nowhere to go. And that were, and I knew, you know, so if I was going in the next day and I know I was going to get a kick in, you don't really look forward to that. Now, in this situation, I've gone through hell this year in similar situations, and I've had a lot of nonsense. And now, really, that I know pretty much I'm going, I'm now handling myself much better and more confidently because I kind of don't care. And before I did care, if you know what I mean. But I don't, I think, well, what are you going to do to me? Make me redundant? Always scary. So I'm, and that's nice, and that's how I should have been. But that's kind of so I know that I'm too naive, I'm not detailed enough, I'm not strategic enough. I can't be asked. All I'm really interested in is making, you know, when I was a fellow, it was making sure the learner was happy and they were getting a good, this was going to be good for them. Under Elevate, I wanted my learners and I wanted my team to be happy and to make sure they were getting a good positive. With GLAAD, I've only recently got involved with the learners again, which is fantastic. My concern has been the team. And that's as, so I don't think I'm strategic enough to be at this level. I'm at the wrong level, I think. Okay. So that's what you, and still has kept me up most of this year, which has been a bad year, until recently when I've let go emotionally, if you know what I mean.
Okay. Well, that's what I've got to follow up then, because you mentioned that in the course of the old project, that there were some personnel issues.
Yes.
And that, and I don't know, in terms of the, you know, you dealt with them, that there was a process you had to go through to address them. And how did you find that was hard work, or did you feel that there's a process, I just need to do it?
I found it impossible. So if I have issues, and I've struggled with GLAAD as well, if I have issues, there's process. As soon as you say the word process or procedure or policy, I've stopped listening to you. It just sounds too boring. What I want to have is a coaching and mentoring type conversation with the individual and work and help them to do whatever they need to do. And that's lovely when you connect with people in the right way. I have no problem where I need to engage in a process if I am fighting for somebody else, then I will engage. But when I think it's a fight worth fighting, if you like, If I have, there was a particular member of staff, well, no, there's a couple of members of staff actually, but one in particular who would not do what she didn't want to do. So I tried all my coaching mentoring tricks and it didn't work. I tried looking at a process, perhaps talking to my line manager, seeing what I could do, and it wasn't very well geared up, and I still think that's true of the university, I have to say. So when you have... So I've experienced bullying this year, and actually, you know, I won't say the university has let me down, but there really hasn't been the support. I mean, I was very interested to see the online learning for equality and diversity and bullying. I thought, well, that's positive if they make sure everybody has to do it. And perhaps thinking about that and that you don't have to put up with that sort of nonsense. Mm. So with this particular individual, I kind of gave up and just said, okay, what do you want to do?
Right.
Because that person there, and I thought, yeah, and it sort of links back to strengths coaching and stuff like that. What are you good at? And that's what I try to do with GLAAD. What do you want to do? What would you like to focus on? Let's get you doing that. Because at least then, you know, you can do it. So that individual presented an issue with me, issue for me, and because you're managing everything else, you know, if in the initial kind of stuff doesn't work, they think, oh, Christ, okay, what can I, all right, let's put it on them and, you know. So in that sense, I suppose it can work. But that's the thing with management. You've got to get people to do stuff they don't want to do. And it's sometimes hard. And in certain cases, I have to say, you're going to do it. It should go over my head. And again, this is where the line manager perhaps wasn't so good.
Yeah.
She's I think she was quite like me, you know. Yeah. If somebody's not going to play, you think, okay. Whereas, so that could be quite challenging. It didn't keep me up at night. Mm. And I just decided, okay, how can I make use of her?
Right.
Yeah, get her on board. How can I do that? And I tried to apply that to GLAAD. But I think if you have an issue with a member of staff who doesn't want to play, I'm not experienced enough and it's not in my nature to then get heavy with them or whatever. So I've done it many times where I said, I know you're not happy, just do it. You have to do it. Generally, in fact... Mm. In all most cases, can't think of any who didn't, but they'll do it, you know.
Yeah.
But what happens when you've got a complete block and perhaps your line manager says, how does it work? HR are fantastic. I've got a lot of time for them. They're very ridiculously busy, overburdened, really overburdened, but they're great people and they've always tried to help me. But it's not clear. I hadn't had any training. I did a management module as part of my master's. You know, I wrote an essay, who cares? So I think really, and I think they're trying to address that at the university. Again, as an institution, I think it tries to listen and develop and adapt more now. But certainly... The majority in Elevate, me and Kat were, banging our heads, just trying to get people to do it, or the university to do it. So I think it's better now.
Did you feel that there were times when you had to conceal what you were feeling in order to sort of keep a professional relationship?
Yeah, I'm not good at hiding my feelings. Okay. I can't. If somebody's pissed me off, they'll usually know it. Or if I don't like somebody, they'll know it. And I could show a bit of self-control and hide that, but I don't choose to because I'm getting to be an old, difficult woman and I'm enjoying myself. So, but when I'm in management situations, I've always tried to be emotionally intelligent, step back from those, if there are any negative emotions or judgments or whatever, step back so that I can have a Burns adult to adult conversation going on. And I've always been quite good at that. This is why I'm not that comfortable as a manager, because part of me wants to be one of the gang. I struggle with it.
So are you saying that in terms of, you know, dealing with your team, that you're quite happy to express your true feelings, but in more sort of strategic sort of context? Is that what you're saying? In terms of clarifying, or are you just saying that, you know, when you're putting your manager hat on, you are more careful?
In Elevate, I always tried to use mentoring skills in management conversations. And the only way you're going to do that is through emotional intelligence and actually stepping back from your own emotions to have that conversation. That could be difficult if you have a difficult relationship, but it helps it, because your emotions are just going to cloud how you should respond. So yes, it was a conscious, and I do it now as well in those management conversations, because otherwise, you know, because you have to deal with people perhaps you don't get on with or whatever, or they've annoyed you. If people don't do what I want them to do, they've annoyed me. But you've got to step back, and I can do that in the conversation and then go home and have some gin and, you know, moan to Dave or whatever. And I think that's, you have to do that. When you let your emotions get into it, it just, I don't know if I can say I've done it this year. I've tried, but I've had a very rough year personally and professionally. So I'm quite surprised I'm still here, actually, and not off sick with stress and all sorts. So I'm quite impressed with my resilience, but whether that's affected how I've managed, I wouldn't like to say. I think I'm still in a lot of stuff. So it's difficult to judge.
Yeah.
Certainly with Elevate, there were some challenging relationships that, yes, I had to step back, because in order to get what I needed for the project. And you have to do that.
And that's, you know, essentially that's a management skill.
It is to
manage your emotions.
Your emotions.
And recognising that in terms of the getting to the desired end point, your emotions are almost irrelevant.
They are. What do I need? What does the project need? What do my staff need? What do my learners need? What do I need for this? And how am I going to get it? No, I've got to deal with this person I can't stand, or they make me angry, or whatever. Or they're being horrid to me or whatnot. And you've just got to, in order to manage their emotions, you've got to step back from your own emotions. And then you can then have a conversation with them, which will ultimately get what you want. I wouldn't say I'm brilliant, that sort of stuff. I think Liz was very good at that sort of stuff. Very good. And other people aren't.
No.
So I don't think I'm brilliant at that, but it's more I would say a lesser management skill, it's more a mentoring skill that has helped me to do it.
Yeah.
Or my that knowledge, if you like.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's wherever you learn it, wherever you first encounter.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Great. Oh, well. Thank you very much.
That's my
thank
pleasure. No problem.
Very interesting.
Oh, good. Sorry, I couldn't remember any detail.
You've been on a journey. Well,
A massive journey. This, that's why when we were in the WEFO meeting, I felt quite emotional.